Hello. I would like to welcome you to another Solid Finances During Economically Challenging Times. These webinars and the presentations on campus are being sponsored by Human Resources and MSU Extension. My name is Marcia Getting, and I'm the Extension Family Economics Specialist with Montana State University. My email address is there on the slide so that if you have a question about any of the material that has been presented, you are free to email me your questions. This webinar is a reproduction, so to speak, of a session that was done on December the 3rd about probate, personal representatives, beneficiary deeds, and cremation, plus some other questions that the participants had that I've incorporated for you. Keep in mind that there are other sessions that were planned for December, and those were organized by Jewel Schumacher, who is also in our department. One is understanding about what the lender wants to know, and the other has to do with Mortgages 101, talking about fixed rate, variable, and refinancing decisions. Just to alert you to keep tuned to the Human Resources website, on the Solid Finances section, they will list the dates that have been selected for sessions to do with retirement planning. We will be breaking some of those sessions out so that we've got the so-called younger generation and also the older generation that is closer to retirement. So be sure to stay tuned, and if you can't attend the presentations at the time that were selected, please feel free to view the webinars. So let's take a look at probate in Montana. What we're going to examine is, what is it anyway? Why does every state have a probate procedure, and is it really something to be avoided? Basically, there's two ways of thinking about probate. There's the probate that's the court procedure, and then there's the probate of things that have to be done after persons have died. So I'm going to look at probate first as a legal procedure, and it's really a process, and it's a process that assures that the estate is going to be transferred to the right individuals. In other words, you don't want just some Tom, Dick, and Harry coming off the street saying, yeah, I should be the one to receive the property. You want a legal procedure to make sure the right individuals inherit. There's also the situation where debts need to be paid. When a person dies, they often have debt. And so what is the procedure to take care of that? And that is probate. And in the old days, there used to be taxes involved. Montana had inheritance taxes, and there is a federal estate tax, but only people who have estates valued at $3.5 million and more end up paying the federal estate tax. So probate can also assure that any necessary taxes are paid. So to lead us into probate, let's take a look at the Montana Homestead Declaration. I'd like for you to just think in your mind what the dollar amount is of the equity in your home that can be protected against creditor claims while you're alive. You'll see why I'm asking this question in a moment. But here we're talking about the Homestead Declaration, and if you record one, you can protect your equity in a home. And that amount is all the way up to $250,000. Now, if your only equity is $50,000 in the place that you own, it's only $50,000. I'm just saying it's up to that amount is protected from creditor claims. Now, my second question is, what is the dollar amount that the homestead allowance will protect against creditor claims after you die? And this protection is provided under the Uniform Probate Code. So now when I asked this question at the session, most of the individuals thought that the $250,000 would also be allowed as a homestead allowance. But notice, it's only $20,000. And I think it's been about $20,000 since, well, at least 25 years. In other words, they certainly have not allowed for inflation. So in the probate process, there are protections made for family members. But if you take a look at that, it's not a lot. $20,000 is your homestead. So they're going to say certain exempt property in your home is also protected. So that means $10,000 worth of that. And gee, you could have that much wrapped up in computer equipment in this day and age. And the family allowance then is $18,000. And this is how much you're allowed in a year for family living expenses. That is not much. Now, we do have some probate, or well, non-probate property out there. Now, this is an example of where there's no probate required. It doesn't have to go through the probate procedure if you do have joint tenancy property. But the reality is, if you have a home that's in joint tenancy with someone else and that person dies, somebody has to take the deceased person's name off of the deed. The same way if you have a checking account and one person has died, then that person's name needs to be removed from the account. Trust property is another example of non-probate. In other words, those assets that you have retitled into the name of the trust are going to pass by the trust agreement, not by any other method. You've already decided that. So that does not have to go through a court-preceded probate. If you have any beneficiary-deeded property, and I'll give you some more specific examples of that later, but that's another example. You've already predetermined who the grantee beneficiary is, and there is no probate of that asset. There is also no probate of any payable on death designation property. In other words, let's say you have a checking account at your local bank. You put POD to your sister. That means upon death, your sister can go to the bank with your death certificate and a photo ID of who she is, and the bank will give her that money. If you have a TOD, which is a transfer on death registration, this is something you do with your stocks, your bonds, your mutual funds, and you're already predetermining that upon your death, those individuals will receive that property that are designated on the form. And again, there's no court procedure for that. Any IRAs that you have, when you establish those, you had the opportunity to do a beneficiary designation. So any IRAs that are named to a specific individual do not have to go through the probate process. The same thing applies for any retirement funds that you have designated to a named beneficiary. So these are all the things that don't go through the probate process. But if you have any title property that's in one person's name only, or you have interest as a tenant in common property, those are examples of property that must go through the probate process. For example, if it's in one person's name only, we have to determine who the heirs are of that individual so that they receive the property. And in Montana, we have different methods of handling a probate depending on what the circumstances of the property are. There's formal. We have an informal process. We have supervised administration. Collection of personal property by affidavit is another method, and a small estate summary administrative procedure. So what I'd like to do now is outline some basic information about those different methods. So there's not just one probate. And that's why it makes it very difficult for the legislature to designate, here's how you do probate, because it depends on what assets that you have. Now, a formal probate is one where everything occurs before the district judge. An example would be a contested will. You know, here's a parent that died, all the property went to one child, the other two kids are going to contest that will because they felt the one child used undue influence. You may have a situation, too, where you have an attorney that looks at the family. He knows or she knows that the heirs don't get along. They've fought since they were kids. And he or she, as the attorney, may figure, you know, what we're going to do is a formal probate. That way, everything's before the court, and it will just be a much more formal situation. And, of course, a formal probate is a lot more expensive because you have court costs involved in that as well. Now, most of our estates in Montana are handled with an informal probate process. What happens here is the personal representative or the attorney files the paperwork with the clerk of the court. And you've got to wait 5 days to even start this procedure. You know, and I think that's fair. We need to have a funeral or a memorial service for that individual, and then we can start with the probate process. If there is a supervised administration, that's one that's done under the continuing authority of the court. An example of this might be a situation where, let's say we've got Flathead Cherries, we've got an orchard, we have somebody that needs to step in and make sure that the Flathead Cherries are picked, they get to the right individual. There's just all kinds of details. So that could be an example of a supervised administration. There is also a collection of personal property by affidavit. And this cannot occur for 30 days after the person dies. You must look at the value of the estate, and if it's less than the liens and any other debts that go against it, as long as it doesn't exceed $50,000, then you can do this collection of personal property by affidavit. An example of this might be a grandmother who has a certificate of deposit of $10,000. That's all she's got. And she didn't write a will. She didn't have a POD on the account. So how that is handled is, let's say there is only one granddaughter, then that granddaughter will do an affidavit of death and then go to the financial institution and prove who she is and then be able to access those funds. So you have that access after 30 days. And we have an example of an affidavit in the Mont Guide that we have available through extension on probate. The small estate summary administrative procedure is, again, looking at the dollar value of the estate, and if it doesn't exceed this $20,010.18, which is a total of $48,000, then you can use this procedure and use those forms. So they take out the cost of administration, funeral expenses, and medical and hospital expenses. So there are circumstances where this would be an appropriate procedure in some situations. I think the concern that many people have is the dollar amount that's allowed to the attorney to settle an estate. It seems like every family has a horror story, and that horror story has been carried on from one generation to the next. So let's take a look. Let's say that we do have a $200,000 estate. This is a mom who has certificates of deposit. She has some mutual funds in a house. And the total value of these is $200,000. So my question to you is, what's the maximum dollar amount that you think would be allowed to the attorney? Well, when I ask this question, I get a wide variety of answers, and even many times $45,000 to $65,000. And that's when I think, gee, I should quit my job with extension, and if I was an attorney, I could do probates, because that's a lot of money. And that's the perception that people have. But let's look at the reality, because these are the choices that I offered to the group that attended the session, and nobody guessed the right answer. So let's look at the way that the probate fee would be calculated for the attorney. The first step is to calculate the cost that is allowed to the personal representative. So let's say we have 2% of the first $40,000 and 3% in excess of that. So that comes up with a PR fee. Then we use that as a basis to calculate the attorney fee. And the attorney fee is 1.5 times what was allowable to the personal representative. So 1.5 times. And I had a gentleman at one of my meetings, and he was kind of cute because he said, okay, here's the deal. I'm going to tell my personal representative to take zero. And 1.5 times zero is zero. And that means the attorney would only get zero, right? Wrong. The way the law reads is what was allowable. So on this $200,000 estate that I told you about, the personal representative could receive $4,400, and that's the daughter. Then we take 1.5 times that for the attorney, and that's $6,600. So the total probate fees, if you want to look at it, in this particular estate was $11,000. Now, I'm familiar with this situation because the personal representative had attended my estate planning meeting years ago, and she knew to ask some questions. But when she went to the attorney, the first thing that he said is don't take that $4,400 as a PR fee. And of course, she looked at him and said, you've got to be kidding, you know, this is my money. And why do you think he would tell her that? And I find with many of my audiences, we think badly of the attorney, of course, and we think he's just out to get more money. Well, no. In this case, the attorney was giving excellent advice because he was saying, look, if you take that $4,400, that is income. And with income, you have to pay Montana income tax and federal income tax. So if she was making $30,000 and declared that $4,400, now we've got taxable income of what? $34,400. So she's going to pay more in taxes. And you see, as the daughter, she receives everything inheritance tax free. There's no federal estate tax because it's not $3.5 million. So in this case, it made no sense for her to take that $4,400. Now, it might have been a different story if we would have had two daughters. And one daughter was named as a personal representative. And she's the one that's having to take off work to go to handle probate issues, do this, do that. And really, it's a big hassle. Well, maybe hassle isn't. It's a big responsibility if you're going to be the personal representative. So in this case of two daughters, the one may go ahead and take the PR fee, knowing that she's going to lose some to taxes, but also knowing she will realize some extra income for that time that she had to take off work, etc. And by the way, on this particular estate, the cost of settling the probate was not $6,600 for the attorney, but rather only $200. If we had a $2 million estate, you can see how it quickly goes up. The personal representative in this case, $39,200. And the attorney would receive $59,250. So when it's based on value, the cost of probate goes up. Unless you're smart and you do your estate planning ahead of time. So you're organized, and when you're gone, it's not going to be that big a hassle to settle your estate. So you'll want to be sure to tell your personal representative to ask the attorney if he or she will handle the probate on an hourly fee basis. If you've done your planning and you die, settling your estate shouldn't be that big a hassle. And if you're organized, why should you have to pay or your estate pay hourly on a percentage rather than hourly? Ask about the hourly, because it could be it's a lot less expensive. Now, in this mother's situation, with her $200, she could have minimized the probate costs, too, by doing some planning ahead of time. With her CDs, she could have put a POD on those, payable on death designation, to whoever she wanted to receive that. In her stocks that she had remaining, she could have put a transfer on death designation, which is also referred to as a TOD. And for her home and the land that was on, she could have done a beneficiary deed on that real property, named the individual that she wants to receive it, and there would be no probate required. So in this case, with the CDs, with the POD, stocks with the TOD, and beneficiary deeds, the cost of probate could have been totally avoided by this mother. Now, just as a refresher, remember that PODs are payable on death designation, and you can have those on savings accounts, certificates of deposit, checking accounts, and even your Montana Medical Care savings account, which is an account that you can put up to $3,000 every year and use that for eligible medical expenses. The thing with the POD is that property, that real or that personal property, passes to your POD beneficiaries and there's no probate. Just a refresher, TOD the same way. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds. Now the Montana beneficiary deed is a way to transfer real property. And I confess, I didn't think I would live to see the day that Montana would allow us to transfer our real property and not have to go through the probate process. So what is a beneficiary deed anyway? It's simply a way to convey real property to one or more grantee beneficiaries upon death without the cost of probate. You decide while you're alive and record that beneficiary deed with the clerk and the recorder in the county where the property's located. So if you happen to own land in Gallatin County, you file your beneficiary deed there. If you also happen to own land in Richland County, then you are required to file the beneficiary deed in Richland County for that particular property. Your grantee beneficiary can be almost anyone. Your spouse, your children, your relatives, your friends, charity such as the Montana 4-H Foundation, perhaps you've got Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, the Boys Club, etc., YMCA. There's all kinds of places out there that if you want them to be the grantee beneficiary, they can. So we do have a probate Mont guide. It's available at our website, but the easiest way is to just go to montana.edu and search on probate. Or if you're familiar with the HR, Human Resources website, all the publications that are listed for the various webinars are listed there as well. Now, one of the reasons I'm covering this particular topic of cremation is that when we asked what people were interested in at a prior meeting, we had 29% of the group, which was the highest, indicate this particular topic. And I think the reason is, you know, interest, maybe not being familiar with it. But if you were to take a guess, what percent of Americans do you think were cremated in the year 2007? So these were the choices that the group had to vote on. And it turns out that in 2007, 35% of Americans that died were indeed cremated. Now, how do you think Montana compares with that? What percent do you think were cremated in the year 2007? 61%. So we are higher. Actually, there are states that have a higher rate than Montana, and in 2005, the rate was 59%. So you can see we went up a couple of percent in a couple of years. So what that meant is we had 5,000 cremations out of our 8,500 deaths. Which state do you think has the highest rate of cremation if you were to take a guess? Alaska, Nevada, Hawaii, Montana, Maine, or Florida? Well, turns out that it's Hawaii with the 66%. And you see, this was, I don't have the Montana listed on here because I wanted to show you the rate of the other states. Why do people do cremation or prefer that method? On one research report, they did percentages, and for many, it's they want to save money, quite frankly. Either they want to save the land. They don't want to have all this land taken up with dead bodies, as they say. For some families, it's a simpler and more convenient choice. That's what 8% said. Some just say it's my personal preference. And then there was this category, body not in the earth, that 6% had indicated that response. So there's concerns about the environment. You know, when it's 23 degrees below zero, there are certainly cold weather constraints. And some people prefer this ease of transportation to distant burial sites. It's a lot easier to carry an urn than it is to have the body transported. Now, in Montana, we do have a Board of Funeral Service. It's in our Montana Department of Labor and Industry. And that is the state agency that regulates cremations. They also establish administrative rules for the laws when they're passed. They have standards that they establish that the funeral directors are to adhere to. And then they also license the mortuaries and the various categories. How many crematories do you think we have in Montana? 14? 31? 55? 75? 100? 230? Well, 31. So it means in some of our communities there would be a distance to drive to be able to take advantage of that. But with 61% taking advantage of cremation, that tells me people are close enough, they're willing to do it. Now let's take a look at the cost of a traditional funeral. AARP did a survey. And what do you think came out to be the average cost? $10,000? $8,120, $7,323, $5,190, or $3,500. Well, I guess I underestimated. I found a range for cremations all the way from $300 to $3,000, and then, according to the AARP study, it was $7,323 for an average funeral. I've seen people spend more than that on a casket. So I thought that was a little low, and you might have a better idea for the area that you're in. Now, as far as cremation costs, the funeral homes provide disclosure forms, and in that, the itemized expenses. May not be a list that you want to look at, but nevertheless, it's provided, and it's tough when you're dealing with grief over the death of an individual, a family friend, a relative. One of the questions I had was, do you have to be embalmed if you're going to be cremated? And it's not required unless you have certain funeral arrangements that you select. For example, even if you're going to have a private viewing, you have to be embalmed. If you're going to have a public viewing, you need to be embalmed. But if you're not going to have either one of those, no, you do not have to be. I also had a question on whether or not caskets are required, and not in Montana. Now, I had a couple of participants argue with that and say, well, they were told that you had to have a casket. And no, not in Montana. As a matter of fact, nationwide, 90% of cremations do not have a casket. Now, what kind of requirements do we have in Montana? Well, I'm not going to feature on all the details, but just a few. For example, you can be placed in a rigid leak-proof container, and that can be fiberboard, pressed wood, or a certain kind of cardboard. So basically, they're saying leak-proof, and of course, we understand why that would be. Now, before a crematory can do the cremation, they must have a written cremation authorization form, and it must be signed by the what they call the agent, and that could be your spouse or your children. I also had questions from people about what to do with the ashes. Well, this was sort of a funny one I saw. There was this businessman that wrote, "Put my ashes in an envelope and mail them to the IRS. Be sure to write on the envelope, now you have everything." Ha ha. Oh my goodness, the kinds of urns that they have out there are amazing. When I was taking a tour of a crematorium here in Bozeman, I saw a little plastic container and I said, good enough for me. But they have all these different things, very expensive to less expensive. There's also a wide variety of interesting ways. One truck driver's daughter said, "I keep a small vial of his ashes in my glove compartment. I'm nowhere the driver that he was, but at least he's still spending a fair amount of time on the road." You know, that's a good sentiment. A lot of people prefer to be scattered, and 30% indicate water. 29% said land, and then there was this other category that said preference of the deceased. Well, whatever that is, it means they couldn't categorize them because there were so many different answers, you know, on the land, various places. But 59% of those that were cremated said they preferred to be scattered rather than to be buried. And where can you scatter ashes in the state of Montana? Privately owned lands are legal. With city parks and lakes, you need to contact the city attorney or the city commissioners and get permission and see if there are any forms. So that's one of those things. It varies from community to community. Same way with county lands, parks, and lakes. Contact the county attorney, contact the county commissioners, see if there is permission required and what kind of forms may be necessary. Montana says if you want to scatter ashes in rivers and lakes, there is no permit that's required by the Montana Department of Environmental Quality. State lands and parks, well, the Commissioner on Fish, Wildlife, and Parks is the one that makes the decision. So you have to contact the commissioner to get permission to do that. The Bureau of Land Management lands, there's a bunch of those that we have in Montana. There are no federal permits necessary. But if it was going to be a commercial enterprise, then yes. Federal waters, let's say you're one of those that used to be in the Navy, or you like to be on the water, you can be scattered at sea. The regulations require that you are out 3 nautical miles and you need a burial scatter at sea notification form. And those are available from the EPA.gov. So this is looking at 3 nautical miles outside the land. How about the national parks? Well, that's an interesting one because each national park has established its own conditions for granting permission. So basically, the bottom line is contact the superintendent of the park that you can find at nps.gov, find a park, that's the place that I go, and you can see what the situation is. Since Yellowstone National Park is close to us, I contacted them and found that you need a special use permit for $25, and that's available at the Yellowstone Visitor Service Office. In Glacier National Park, there is also a special use permit, but at the time I was checking, there was no charge. And basically they said, it was kind of comical, they said, just be sure it's in undeveloped areas. You can also have your ashes scattered by air. The Federal Aviation Administration is the one that regulates this, and basically they say it's okay as long as there's no hazard to persons or property. So you see businesses that have been established that say they will fly your ashes of your loved one out and scatter them. And the same way with the boat scattering at sea, you see businesses that have been established to respond to this need. Here was a hot air balloonist, and I liked his comment. He said, he released my wife's ashes from her balloon high in the desert where she broke the world's record. I think she's smiling. So if you'd like more information on cremation, we do have a Monk Guide or a fact sheet. And that is at www.montana.edu. Do a search on cremation and you will find that updated version. Now, what are your rights over your remains? We talked about cremation, but let's just say you want to do something else. Well, here's an example. Here's Margaret. Margaret informed her four children that she wished to be cremated. Okay, it was very clear. But when Margaret died, Margaret's daughter wanted to do as Mom wished. Her son said, absolutely not. And what happened is the mortuary had to follow the direction of the majority of the children. And this has happened countless times in Montana. And because of this, and also the stress that can result, let's say you've got two kids that say cremation, two kids that say no. You know, you got a family fight. So that's why the morticians approached the legislature and said, we need a law. And the legislature last session passed what is referred to as the Montana Right of Disposition Act. And now we have legal control over our remains after our death. I thought we did previously, but come to find out, no. Even if you had it in writing, as many of the mortuary folks shared, dead people don't sue. Life people do. And so they ended up honoring the wishes of the living over the dead. Well, now you can do something to control this. Under the Montana Right of Disposition Act, you must be 18 years of age or older and of sound mind to do what's called disposition direction. And good of the legislature, they have provided us with four methods for doing that. We can have a prepaid funeral contract, a written disposition direction, a signed affidavit, and a videotape disposition direction. Now, there's two kinds of contracts as far as prepaid funeral contracts, a funeral trust and a funeral insurance policy. And if you purchase one of those, you can, take and name the mortuary as your beneficiary. If you have a written instrument, what you have done is typed it up, handwritten, or a computer-generated direction. And same type of thing. You must have somebody 18 years or older and witnesses. Your affidavit is authorizing another person to control the disposition of your remains. So you're saying, for example, I want my wife to reach a decision that would bring comfort to the family. You know, one guy wrote that. We have an example affidavit that was provided by statute in the Monk Guide, and this must be signed before a notary public. So take a look at that and see if that would be helpful to you. The statute wording says, John Jones, do hereby designate Sarah Jones with the right to control the disposition of my remains upon my death. And you can indicate this. You either have or have not attached specific directions concerning the disposition of my remains with which the designee shall substantially comply, provided the directions are lawful and that there are sufficient resources in my estate to carry out the directions. So you can have this as a part of your form. You can also do a video. And I think if the legislature had just been a little more cognizant, they might have done video/CD because we know there's a lot of those out right now. But you can have a written confirmation of the existence of the video. That is signed by two witnesses who are age 18 years of age and who are also of sound mind. Now we have the example John. He asked his friend to videotape him explaining his wishes that he wished to be cremated, and he wanted his celebration of life at the ranch, not anyplace else. That's where he wanted it. So he had two close friends that were present. They each dated and signed the written confirmation of the videotape. And I think the videotape just gives a different message than written words. You know, you see John. John is expressing this. And how could there be any fights among the family members? It's very visual. You know, it has impact. So as we look at, let's take a look at how many Montanans died in 2008. And that tells us how many people are really, that potentially could benefit from having a statement or a disposition direction. And actually, it's 8,570. So each year, we have an average of about that many individuals die. And that's something, a written disposition or some type of disposition direction is something all of us should have to make it easier for our heirs. But what if a disposition direction does not exist? I mean, when I asked this question at the meeting, 100% of the people did not have a written disposition direction. So if it doesn't exist, then the law does have a list of survivors by priority. So, of course, if it's married, it's the spouse. If a spouse doesn't exist, then it's the children. And if there are no children or a spouse, then parents are the ones that make the decision. If 1, 2, and 3 aren't alive, then it's brothers and sisters. And you see, this is where we get into these family challenges, because you've got half saying one thing and half saying the other. And when you have that kind of situation, if you have all these people that have the same relationship to the decedent and they can't make a decision by a majority vote, they have the opportunity to file an order of disposition with the district court. Then it's the district court, or in this case, the district judge, that determines who has authority to make decisions about a decedent's remains. And I think this is going to be a challenge for the court system. Our district judges are swamped anyway, and now can't you just see all these family disagreements hitting the court? And, of course, those are going to be needed to be decided quickly. You can't wait 2 years. You know, we got to either embalm or cremate or do something with that person. So, in summary, there are 4 methods for providing your disposition directions. We now have a Mont guide, a fact sheet on this topic as well. As a matter of fact, Extension has 31 different fact sheets on estate planning. But methods for providing your disposition directions are a prepaid funeral contract, a written disposition direction, a signed affidavit, and a videotaped disposition direction. That Mont guide it says not available online. It is now, I'm happy to say. We just got her up. So take advantage of that. Do a search on what are your rights over your remains, and you will find that Mont guide. If you can't, email me, and we'll get it to you. Just a reminder of those future sessions on lending and mortgages that were held in December or are going to be held. If you weren't able to attend these, please feel free to take advantage of the webinars on those topics. In January, we will be doing some serious estate or retirement planning programs. Be sure to look at the Human Resources website so that you can see which ones you want to participate in. This is Marcia Genning, wishing you success as you start doing some planning, thinking about probate, looking at cremation, the Montana Right of Disposition Act. A wealth of information is available from MSU. Our motto is to take the university to the people. In this case, the people are located at MSU, and we're certainly glad to share that information with you.